It's my great joy and privilege to introduce to you Jordan Whitmer. I met Jordan when he was tall, young, and handsome at Wheaton College, 18 years of age, and he was actually doing a breakout session at Amplify Conference on the next generation in Gen Z. And Jordan now is one of the youngest leaders within, and has formed his own nonprofit called the How To Movement. And is really doing some incredible work in ministry throughout North America, Canada, and the UK as well, expanding further and further afield too. And so Jordan has a particular passion for revival history and John Martin. He's got some really cool book collections. It was a great joy to be able to spend some time in his apartment in Minneapolis before he relocated to the city of Chicago. And just to see some of his passion and hear from him as well. And so I want to invite him up just to share with us and connect that into this next generation, because we know that if we journey alone and we don't take the next generation with us, really what we're doing is not helpful, and we'll die with this current generation. And so let's always be mindful of the next generation as well. So welcome, Jordan Whitmer. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. It is an honor to be with you all here in Oregon. I notice it is a lot warmer than it normally is when I come out here, so that's great. And I'm enjoying the Pacific Northwest in the summer here. But it's an honor to be here. And as Desmond said, my name is Jordan Whitmer. I lead a ministry movement to Gen Z called the How to Life movement. And it started 7 years ago when I was a junior in high school. So I'm 23 years old now, about to be 24 in a few weeks, next month. And when I was 16 years old, I wanted to do something more to reach my friends for Christ in Arkansas, where I had grown up. And decided with my friends to plan a completely student-led youth outreach event where everyone on the stage of this evangelistic event was under the age of 18 that was on the stage. And we thought that young people listen to young people more than pretty much any other voice in their life. Normally that's a really bad thing, but we wanted to see that be a good thing through a youth student-led event. We called that event How to Life. And this first ever event that we did when I was in high school was amazing. Over 700 people came to this event. 75 young people made a commitment to Jesus that night when I was in high school. And that night just really impacted me, impacted so many people in my community, and launched what has now grown to be an international, global, Gen Z-led movement. Where we have seen, as of now, 123 events in 25 states across the U.S. and 6 countries around the world, including in the U.K., Germany, France, Mexico, Canada, and just seeing a lot of local young people stepping up. So I myself don't necessarily see myself as much as, I have been a proclamation evangelist. I can and I do preach the gospel from platforms every now and then. My heart very much is to be a bit more of a mobilizer. I love helping mobilize, empower, and equip a next generation of evangelists. So young people who have a heart to reach their friends. So all those events that have taken place, each of those have a local proclamation evangelist who's usually 16 years old or 18 years old, someone who's maybe never shared the gospel in that sort of context before, but they, along with kind of their local team, come together and work to do something in their community. We want to see more events and initiatives like that take place around the world. Every summer right around now is a really exciting time. July is kind of when the back-to-school stuff comes out in Walmart, and everyone that has had kids in school or been in school is like, oh my, but like summer's not done yet, is it? But July is kind of when the mindset starts thinking towards school. So that's when we kick it into gear of, hey, do you want to maybe do something this school year to reach your friends for Jesus? So we get a lot of people messaging us. And on my phone here is my Instagram stuff. Instagram and TikTok are the apps of the future here for Gen Z. And anytime I open up our How to Life movement page, there's about 13,000 people that follow this page, which is young people primarily from around the world. And these are all direct messages of young people who are inquiring, hey, could I maybe do something in my community? So my staff and team, their job is to, in essence, talk to these people, and try to help them and see, is this something we could maybe do in their community? And then we progress to talk with them, take them through training if they seem solid. And this year we're hoping to have many new areas, including possibly Portland, Oregon. We have two young people from Portland who for the first time reached out. And I believe they go to Cedar Mills Church. So, they reached out and, they're 18 and 15 years old and they're like, hey, we want to plan a How to Life event in Portland. So very encouraging. And I met with them a few days ago when I first out here and we're looking to help them, plan the first ever event in Oregon. And, so we'd love to stay in touch with those of you that are, Oregonians here about that as that comes along, as it'll be exciting and, but it's really been just an amazing journey of seeing young people, seeing the Lord work through young people. I believe that many teenagers and young people, they want to make a difference, but they don't know how. They don't know where to get started. And the statistics for Gen Z are pretty bad overall, not going to lie. Barna says that only 4% of Gen Z in America has a biblical worldview. One out of every 25 teenagers that you meet on the street in this country probably would actually know what it means to follow Jesus. Some areas would be a little higher, some a little lower, on average, about 4%. And but the good news is a lot of that 4% often do want to do something, but they just don't know how. They need to be equipped, they need to be trained, and they need to be given an opportunity. And we don't believe in letting people look down on us because we're young. And I'm 23, and I have to make sure I don't look down on people who are 16 and younger. Like, we always need to be empowering the next generation to step in and try to equip and empower them. And I'm going to turn kind of the conversation a little to what Desmond mentioned about history. I have had a real passion for Christian history. And I mean, just the whole history of the church, the 2,000-year history, there's so much to unpack. Like, how did we get from Jesus and the disciples to today? And it's really amazing. And because truly the fact that the global church exists as it does today is because it's been this chain reaction of people who have shared the gospel for 2,000 years, who have discipled their kids and their grandkids, and people that have gone into different nations, and the gospel has spread everywhere. And like, Europeans were reached by people from the Middle East, and people like it's all been this whole cycle of people reaching each other. And in this day and age, it feels like it's almost everybody reaching everyone, because the church is kind of truly global in a sense, in a way that maybe has never been before. And so during the middle of kind of pandemic-y times when I needed a new hobby, I got onto this dangerous journey of learning about Christian history, and particularly one era that I got really excited about, the era of the late 1800s of the student volunteer movement. Some of you might be familiar with the student volunteer movement, some of you might not be, but I started learning about it, and then I started buying books off eBay that are from that era, and just started acquiring a massive Christian history book collection, and then branched into other areas as well. And so Desmond had a chance to see my apartment in Minneapolis before I moved, and I have all the books. I just relocated and they're not set up anymore, but I found stuff from, I have stuff literally as old as 1700s, some like George Whitefield pamphlets and some Jonathan Edwards things, and just stuff from that era that's really cool. Stuff that would have been a part of that first great awakening era that people maybe would have read and heard the gospel through a pamphlet in that early printing press times. And then in the 1800s, you had all this cool stuff. And for many years in the United States, missions, global missions was not really a priority. We always think, oh, America tries to reach the world. But for a long time, it wasn't a big deal in this country, until about, you had Adoniram Judson and some leaders early on that were really vibrant and said, we're going to go to Burma and modern-day Myanmar and share the gospel there. And guys like him inspired a whole generation of people. But in the late 1800s, the Lord really stirred something up in young people in the United States through some young people that were going to Princeton at that time. A guy named Robert Wilder and some of his friends emerged, and they just started praying for the world, and they wanted to see the gospel shared to the nations. And he himself had been born in India and just really kind of wanted to take that heart back to his generation of Princeton Ivy League students. And in summer 1886, there was this amazing gathering in Mount Hermon, Massachusetts, Northfield, at the schools of D.L. Moody, one of the evangelists that all of us in here would look up to one way or another, I'm sure. And at this gathering, this historic gathering, there were several hundred of some of the brightest young men from around America at that time that came together for this summer project. And they set into this. They didn't really have a clear agenda. It was just D.L. Moody was going to teach. It was going to be good, and everyone was going to be encouraged. And I think D.L. Moody wanted he wanted people to become evangelists. And what happened was that did happen through some of these young people that started praying, and they asked D.L. Moody, hey, can we share about reaching the nations and our heart for the world and the need? So there were people, it was called the Meeting of the Ten Nations. You had 10 nations that were represented, some that were missionary kids who had grown up on the mission field, others who were nationals from those countries, and even a Native American that all got on stage and just shared for a minute or a couple minutes each about their heart for the world. And from that, it spurred on a whole movement where people signed this card that said, it is my will, if God permit, to be a foreign missionary. And 100 people signed that, and they became known as the Mount Hermon 100. And that launched the student volunteer movement. Robert Wilder, that Princeton student, proceeded to take that entire next year and toured like 130 U.S. campuses and just talked to young people on these campuses. And I think it was like 2,500 people or 2,000 people, including 500 women, that signed that card as well. It is my will, if God permit, to become a foreign missionary. And that movement ended up leading to many people going overseas as missionaries in an era when, at that point in time, the church seemed to be stronger in the U.S., in Europe, for that very unique window in time. And a lot of those young people were like, we can't let the gospel stay here with us. We've got to get this to the nations of the world. Many of them went to the global south and planted churches and translated Bibles. And to this day, there are vibrant churches around the world as a result of a bunch of young people who had the zeal and the passion, and they decided to go to that next level. The leader of this, the person who kind of ended up chairing this movement at the time, was known as John R. Mott. He is not very well known in Christian circles today, but back then he was, like, he's basically probably the most prominent American ministry figure between D.L. Moody and Billy Graham in that late 1800s, early 1900s. He was mentored by D.L. Moody directly and ended up just being a huge mobilizer himself who would go from campus to campus and mobilize missionaries, and he would travel around the world himself and ended up traveling more than like anyone had at that time by steamboat around the world. Like, he crossed the Atlantic dozens of times and the Pacific a dozen times on a boat, and would do that. And there were no cars. There were no, it was trains and boats. That's how you got around the world at that time. And, they did not have cars. They did not have phones. They did not have, like, in any new invention. They would just be like, oh my goodness, like, we can send a telegram from a boat now. That's like cool. Or, and then when finally cars became a thing, it was like, this is so cool. Toward the end of his career, John Mott finally flew on an airplane in Africa. He's like, David Livingston never had this opportunity. Oh my goodness, I'm flying on a plane. And they saw all this stuff emerge. But the bottom line was they had a resilience for the gospel. They mobilized a generation. And I personally am very inspired by John Mott because I kind of feel like I'm called to similar things of working to mobilize a generation of young people, mobilizing evangelists, people that can go out and reach people and take the gospel to this next generation. He also had a heart to be an evangelist, like I also kind of do, in more of a secondary kind of way. At the end of his life, he said, I want to be remembered as an evangelist. I was like, well, that's really cool. And he ended up winning the Nobel Peace Prize at the end of his life in 1946, probably the only major evangelical Christian to ever have won the Nobel Peace Prize, one of only like 15 Americans that have even won the Nobel Peace Prize. So, along with Barack Obama and others. So, like, I mean, he's in the same book as all those people, and we just don't really talk about him today. But the Lord really used him and used a lot of just very selfless young people during that time. And some of the books I have are of these big student volunteer movement quadrennial conventions that they had, where they would have thousands of young people. This was the passion conference of its time, where people would rally together in Kansas City or Des Moines, Iowa, or Detroit or Toronto, and they would assemble all these young people for a time of training and equipping, and they'd come together. And they would go to the nations of the world. And there are some books that literally show in the back lists and rosters of all the missionaries that sailed overseas in 1910. And then in 1911, it shows their institution and their where they went in the world. And it's just really humbling to know that there's all these people who said, you know, I'm going to make my life count for Jesus. So my heart and passion is that we can see something like that again in this generation. Obviously, the need is huge. This generation is lost, broken, and hurting in ways that are so, so profound. And there's a lot of nuances in our modern world. There's a lot of work that we have to do, both in this country, in the United States. It's a very lost, broken time for young people. There's a lot of confusion, a lot of things, but Jesus is still the hope. He always has been our hope. We often say Jesus is the hope for Gen Z, because he is. And we need to see that happen. And I'd encourage all of you in this room to invest into the next generation, try to have conversations with the young people in your life, whether they're no matter what age they are, but just to help empower them, encourage them to know that they can make a difference. If you know young people that have a heart for the Lord, fan that flame, help them, empower them. And at no point should any of us say, all right, now it's my turn to get up on stage and it's my turn. No, like we always need to, it's not about whose turn it is. It's about who can we empower, who can step up in this next generation. And we need John Mott's generation. We're talking about generations, so if I'm Gen Z, and there's people in this room are millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, keep going back. You've got the silent gen before that, and then you've got the greatest generation, those who fought in World War II, then the lost generation, and before that is John Mott's generation. Want to know what they were called? The missionary generation. The historians literally have named that entire generation after those guys, after that movement. Like, Gen Z falls in line with all that. It's kind of cool. Look it up on Wikipedia, and it's called Strauss-Howe Generational Theory. That's all talked about in there. But bottom line, we need another missionary generation. We need a global network of people who can rally together. My dream is that there would be young people from all over the world that rally together on behalf of the gospel, and because time is short, and I love in scripture, Acts 2:17 is one of my favorite verses, which talks about from the book of Joel, where God said, in the last days, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. And that shows two things. Number one, that young people are going to be instrumental in the last days, whenever the last days come. But also that the older generations and all the generations will dream dreams and be instrumental in this process. It's not just one generation or the other. It's all the generations working together on behalf of the gospel. And that's what we need to see happen in this future here. So an honor to be here with everyone. And thank you all for having me here. So. Thank you.